It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. And just dancing around here with some technical minor difficulties, nothing like Iggy's problems. And the other politicians, I'm not going to dwell on much of this, but everybody, I have to tell you, every one of you, your comments and everything is right on the money. But here's your biggest problem here in Hawaii. You have a body that set rules and make rules, but they have no rules to guide themselves, no ethics. They have no ethics rules. Even nepotism is tolerated openly in state government, in the legislature. So when we find ourselves struggling with Carlton Sheen, let's look at Gary Gill. Let's look at many of these people. Who are they? I can remember in the last 8 years that I've spoken about Mufi Hanneman, most of you are inclined to call up and say he's a good guy. Well, let me just remind you, it wasn't a thing of going against the grain and talking bad or, as they say here in town, stink about someone. It's about facts. So when you invite brother, cousin, sister, aunt, uncle, and a cute politician that say the right thing, let me remind you, this is exactly what you get, this climate that you see today, when people like Ellison can come in and buy you out, when others can do anything they want to, and the developer bring their cousins, aunts, and uncles to buy it out, but it's affordable housing. So there is some logic and some good warning in this old mudcat's voice of mine, and I don't care to be so eloquent and sit down and tell you these things, because I figure a smart person is a smart person. Intellectually, they can deduce themselves what is going on. I just add the color to it, but let me just tell you. Many of you out there that are bitching and moaning about all the pains and the suffering, let's start at home. When the politician comes along and says, I need someone to cook some stew for me so we can have a coffee and serve stew and rice and we're going to have a talk, you are perpetuating these things. Let's start there. Let's not look outward and find out what it is. And that's kind of sounds probably disrespectful of the practices here, and it's not meant to be that way, but sometimes people learn your kindness and they use it against you. And that's what we see here. The political climate here is that the politicians and those with money use your kindness against you. So this is why we see more people on the street sleeping in and handling shopping carts and nowhere to live. But you hear the word, the praise word. It's almost a religious word now, affordable housing. So it brings, don't be shocked that someone like David Ige, Neil Abercrombie, will be so committed and betray you and tell you these things, because he's from the same ilk of thinking. Be kind, be nice, support, be bought off, whatever it is that. And there's a debate about if someone is being bribed or not. Well, if you got no money and you're out there and you're a person like Kimberly Pine and you got no money but you want to be in politics because you can't get a job doing anything else, and you go out there and you jump seats and you play seats, but you get a little money. So what you do is that you get money from here, there, and everywhere, and they control you. So don't be shocked. Then she comes and sits down, plop down, take your basic issues and claim to represent them, but they never get resolved. Take, for example, the sludge out there in Waianae that came from Hawaii Kai. All kinds of regulations and press releases and I'm on top of this one, and you still got the crab laying there in the dirt. So let's not go too far beyond our doorsteps, the threshold, and blame others. You, me, and how we react and how we treat and how we quickly. A politician can give you a popsicle on a hot day and then he's your hero for the rest of your life. But there are many more days left in your life. And how does that politician then vote to impact you? He got you through that one day, but what is his or her ethics? So the community of environmentalists and all that say, well, we should go and vote for this person and he should nominate this. In reality, there's a great danger if you pay close attention to this practice, and they say the one that does the most screaming gets the attention. And environmental community, they too can simply be just their support can be misplaced. But once the fever gets going, you know, where were they with Gary Gill? The United States Attorney has indicted two men that operate the Wymanala Gulch, that works there at the Wymanala Gulch regarding medical waste and spillage and whatever falsified, whatever the claim was, but it was related to that incident. And I've shared with you in great detail that Gary Gill stood on Mount Sinai of the garbage pit there in Wymanala Gulch and lied to you and told you that it was a storm, January 13th, or right in that area, that created it was a 100-year storm. And I've shown you, and I've posted it at carolcox.com, where there was a lie already being told, perpetuated, when they knew that it had flooded in the earlier year, maybe 19, 20 days prior, about a month. And we tend to, when the environmental community says we support this guy, well, okay, fine, but that's their right. But I don't support Carlton Chings for the reasons that his background and simply if you listen to his comments. I mean, I was looking at him the other day and he talked about the sweet spot. The sweet spot. What the hell does that mean when you're dealing with resources and natural resources that are challenged anyway, and always there's a demand for them and someone always trying to encroach, and he's looking for the sweet spot? So would you put a racetrack around a bird sanctuary? Would that be the sweet spot? So, again, you know, there's this dairy out there in being proposed, this giant dairy, factory dairy, I would call it, and on Kauai. Omidyar, the founder, or one of the founders of eBay, made a lot of his money. There's major developments that he's presenting. And where is the environmental community? Blue Planet is here. Michelina and others went to Blue Planet, and Gary Gill was working and associated with Blue Planet. Blue Planet is funded in part by Omidyar. So we tend to put our blinders on and tend to, we say that, you know, what I love about me being me, it's not a lonely world, it's the only world. And that is, you hear people go, well, I have to stay away from you because I don't like your style. See, you name people. See, and you go out there and you confront these people too much, and so we have to have a happy medium. We have to work things out and you know, give and take. Well, how can you give part of the truth and take part of the truth? It's all or nothing, in my opinion. The truth is the truth. So, These things, and if there's a discussion that Carol Cox does not like William Isla or what have you, however it is interpreted, could it not be the same that I'm simply expressing my understanding and knowledge and sharing with you, just like they would be opposed to Qing? So this whole process, folks, everybody that's standing, sitting, listening, singing, doing whatever, you are part of the problem, as we call it a problem now, because we don't get out, and many of us don't get out and participate and vote. And I mean, we have part of a society here, a community here, where there are people, mind you, that boast that they don't vote. I don't participate. Hell no, I ain't going down there and vote. I ain't wasting my time. And it saddens me, because you are basically relinquishing the last say you have in government. Unless, of course, you're good at cooking beef stew, then you probably could get the attention of a politician. Or if you know how to hula chicken or do a rotary pig. No, that's a rotary club. I'm sorry. Rotisserie. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, this is the day of reckoning. And I think we need to step back and understand that in part of these communities that are impacted, Native Hawaiians, you have people, and I've had them directly tell me, that live in the homeland, that has gotten their home set up, and you take Waimanala, you take Nanakuli, and there are people that live on homestead land that have gotten across the threshold and they're safe, and the disdain and the pain that they project on the homeless population. They shouldn't be on the beach. They shouldn't be here. And when we project that, we are contributing to the problem, because then we give the politicians some dumb reason to go up and start a rule that says don't piss, don't sit, don't sleep, don't on the sidewalks, or don't camp on the beaches, or don't go out and you can't go out and fish at nighttime. You can't get to the ocean to fish because it's a city park. These are the same people you cook beef stew for. So it's more than elephant. It's in comparison, you're going from one extreme. You got a guy who has a yacht that he sits up and it rarely is used, and just sits there on occupying space in state waters. I'm curious to know who is he paying the rent to and how much he's paying rent for. And then over here we have the politician who know that they need you. You are so important when it's election time. You're the most important thing in their life. Their PhD, their law degree, their Mercedes-Benz, their BMW, their connections with the courts, their friends in high places means nothing to them, folks. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. They can't cash it in unless they get in. And they get in because you out there will wash the dishes, sell the tickets, come in and give them the lay and stand up and speak and defend them. And at the end of the day, when they get in office, they screw you. It's not just the words that they speak. It's the actions that they take, or the inactions. We talk about government and people being involved and who we're going to appoint. I mean, I'm still scratching my head to figure out what is so important about David Ige's nomination of Qing that would cause him to sit there while the people's business need to be taken care of. He made the nomination. Does he not trust that Qing is going to go in there and speak and answer the questions as asked, or give the right answer? I mean, didn't the governor have something better to do? Try get him to come on the show and talk straight talk about it, and I don't think it would be much success. But anyway, the placing the blame externally outside of you and me, and I remind you, because they're in politics, they're still human beings, and they have a good side to them. That's a given. Not every politician is evil and criminal. And in fact, I'm sure in a 24-hour period, every politician will have an act of kindness towards something or someone. But the system, the grind, the number of people taxing it, the number of people wanting something, and you see the fancy lobbyists and all, and coming in and talking and having access. And I've told you this, and one of my pet peeves is that many environmental groups with big money or contact that work you good have access, and they can install people inside of your administration and in your government and have direct access. Carlton Ching has access to documents there at DLNR, but he hadn't been confirmed. Carol Cox write a request for a letter, and he gets stiffed, or asked for documents, or asked to go in and look at them as the law allows. He gets the shaft. Or he gets a bill from the Attorney General saying, well, you can see them, but just to prepare them to let you look at them, it'll be $600. So this isn't about Ching. This is about Kuching. You understand? It's about money, and you and I don't have it, but we have the power. But come once election, that's when you can feel your oats, so to speak. But if we give it away and, well, he's a nice guy, he's a real nice guy. Really? That's funny. We see more legislation coming out now. Well, he's a really nice guy. Calvin Say, he's fighting for his political life right now. And, they're going to investigate him, and things going to work out. Really? The same people that's going to work it out and that you're hoping to is work on the Calvin Say who exempted them from any ethics rules. You see? So what kind of good favor would you be showing, or thanks or praise would you be showing, or gratitude would you be showing to Calvin Say if you ripped him up and gutted him and sent him sailing away as a failed politician? It just doesn't work that way, folks. Nepotism. I'm sitting there reading the other day, and I see in 2013, oh, wow, this is when Gary Gill was in office. Well, Gary Gill somehow, and I don't know, maybe it's me projecting, but I thought I saw his daughter's name as a public relations work in the state health department public relations office, or one for one of those divisions or departments. So this boat that we see rocking, where does it get its momentum and it's rocking? Where the politician Arnie Martin is quoted this morning in the paper about good management and good oversight. Really? Politicians say anything, folks. Well, see, there's down the road there in just a short time, there's a thing called the elections. And this is when you see the mercurial characters come out. This is when you'll see the chameleons come out. This is when you'll see the careful politician, the one who has the ability to say things just opposite of what he said yesterday. And you will digest it, and you will incorporate it and say, he's a good guy. And so the root of the problem is most of us, and I say most, not all, most of us abandon the one thing. If you remember way back, I told you that the average person that is a voting age and a voting citizen should take his vote and put it in a little box and set it on the fireplace. Well, of course, many of us don't have fireplace and don't need them here in Hawaii, but you understand the gist. And come election, you treat that vote as it's the most valuable thing you have, more precious than money. Because in reality, your vote is an investment, so to speak. You could see it as an investment. It pays dividends if you vote for the person that's good, honest, and going to do what's right for the people. Or you can make a bad investment, so to speak, and you get shafted. You've seen that. And so it's equivalent. Your vote is like all the money that you can invest in the stock market, and your CPA or in all of those people that guide you and teach you how to invest and steer you, the brokers. They can guide you, and you trust them, and you put your money on the wrong politician, or your vote on the wrong politician, that translates later down the road loss of money. And I mean specifically money now, and that is more taxes, really, more fees for registration of cars. You don't see the relationship, but there's a direct correlation. Direct. That's why, like, Ellison sees his multi-billion dollars and Omidyar sees his $1 billion as means of reinvesting, buying islands, building dairies, and doing all these things, is nothing greater than your vote. You can invest the same thing. But if you take your vote and come the end of the year, you really can't find it, you don't know where it is, and you lost the receipts, and you know you made deposits, but you're out of the door because Mufi Hanneman asked you to come and make chili for him. Or David Ige is going to have a chili talk, and he's going to come down there, and you shook his hand, and then you go away concluding that he's a good man. So all of this starts from the basic levels of human life, how we react and act in our daily lives. And so at the end of the day, the investment that we made with our votes, and some people, and this is just trying to draw parallels to share with you why, give you some insight, why it's not all about bribes and corruption. It's about the kindness that first is come, the person comes along and they find your trust. And they focus, they're really looking for your vote. See, they want to see how you handle that vote. Look at that. He treats his vote like some people treat pennies. You know, some of us will look at a penny, a brand new shiny penny laying on the sidewalk, and wouldn't dare pick it up. And others will look at that penny and say, one penny plus 99 more makes a dollar. So the same thing about our votes. One vote cast the right way will save me money and save me from stress. And if I am stressed and get ill, I can go to the doctor because the cost of medical care is not out of the astronomical. Because I voted for a jackass that wouldn't, who cottoned to the business, the medical industry, rather than worrying about the welfare of the people that voted him in. It's all about the money. It sure is. It isn't about Carlton Ching. It ain't about that. We voted. I brought David Ige on the show, and if you remember, didn't ask him many questions. I want him to tell you. We could get a better understanding because anybody can answer questions right away, but if a person can talk to you, and you'll get the rhythm, you'll get the tone, the tenure of what it is this person is about. So this shock that we see, this horrifying behavior that we see in the mayor's office, I don't believe that we would tolerate anything else like the rail that we see. There's no way. I don't believe that we see that, honestly. There have been more lies, more trickery, more lies, more untruth, more trickery than any project that I have ever read about or anything. I look at the Los Angeles water deal, Mulholland, how getting from the Orange Valley and that story and all of that took place and that and how. And I look at the history of the train, how it was allowed to develop and go across country and what happened and what was tolerated and these barons that became billionaires, so to speak, in those times. And I look at that and in comparison, we are more educated, so to speak, today. We have greater means of communications. We don't rely on one source of communication or one source of news or what have you. There are talk shows, radio shows. There's newspapers, and I know many of us don't trust them. But how could such spin machine work to get us to where we are now with the rail that sitting in limbo and it's needing to have more trickery? And you are going to be taxed, and the very person that you cook chili for just voted to extend the taxes, so to speak, so that they can pay for the rail. See how that vote translates into money? 524-1080 if you'd like to talk or tell me what you got. 524-1080. Anyway, let's look at, did you see this little story about Monk's Hills? And the lady slapped the phone out of the lady's hand. Now, I read some of the comments, and I'll tell you up front how that transpired. I get a call from the victim, and I'm told that someone had assaulted her, and I said, well, it sounds like something that is consistent with what other calls that I've been hearing. And there's this Monk's Hill Foundation, and there's a couple others, and one of them doing good spread. And you know, like myself, I love animals and the environment and protecting it and what have you. But I got to be honest with you, folks. There's a big sham with that whole effort. The Monk's Hill has been here before, possibly before man got sand between his toes on these islands. Or woman. I like that way I've been trained. Everything out of my mouth is man. You know, man did this and. But I guess that would be okay as long as I admit that man screwed it up too. So I apologize to you ladies out there that I don't want to sound chauvinistic. So anyway, this Monk's Hill effort is, do you know that? There's no rules, absolutely no rules, no federal law to say a specific distance from that you must stay away from the Monk's Hill. Now, many of you out there believe that, well, it helps. And for you to come out and openly say that, letting the people know that there's really no law that say that you can't go near the whales or the dolphins or what have you is wrong. It's going to make trouble. Well, here's my theory. You make trouble when you lie to the people. You make trouble when you challenge people in a hostile fashion saying, go back, get out of here, get out of here. You're going to scare the baby. You're going to scare the mama. Get out of here. Wow. This person must be on speed, man. This is the kinds of reactions that you're getting from these people that run down and put a rope around, run down and put a fence around the Monk's Hill. In doing that brings more distraction and it acclimates the seals to people and nets. And, you know, when nets are floating in the water, that's the way it goes. So this lady gets... Her name is Zini. She gets assaulted, as she reports. And she apparently filed a criminal complaint. And I want to just read to you from this booklet here. This is NOAA. And this, once again, this is about government being irresponsible. So this is a marine wildlife viewing guidelines. Now, remember now, it didn't say marine law, but marine viewing guidelines. So here we have, this is the guidelines for Hawaii. And I must read you, tips for maximizing your viewing experience. Keep a safe distance. Do not chase, closely approach, surround, swim with, feed, or attempt to touch marine wildlife. Never entice marine wildlife to approach you. Keep your distance. We recommend 150 feet. Now, if you listen to the average person that's running around there with a rope and a net in hand and screaming at you, telling you, you must stay back, you got to be 150 feet, so I'm going to call the police on you, that is a carryover from the mainland mentality when native people are involved or people of color. You got these intelligent people who always, when all else fail, they threaten you with being arrested. Don't like that comment, then you should go see a psychiatrist, because that is exactly what transpires. The average person, when I'm approached, it's never, hi, how are you doing, in an intellectual fashion. It's always ultimately resorts to, well, I'm going to have to call the police on you, whether it's a security guard, anything. I'm here exercising my rights. I'm in my right, in the right place. I'm doing the right thing. I'm doing legal. But this is what happens, see. You're using the big club. So imagine now, you've been lying and you've been building up this, presenting this, that this is law. And who tolerates that and who allows it? These people get trained by NOAA. They even tout that they are, in fact, there and operating on the National Marine Fisheries permit. Now, if I try to get a permit, I'd probably be thrown out on my head. So, it's really interesting what goes on with this group of people. And now, is that going to threaten the monk seal by educating the people? Well, I think it's more important that you, the citizen, know that we must respect these animals, we must protect them, we must not harass them, because getting too close can trigger a stress reaction or trigger a reaction that the mother may abandon the baby. You and I know that. Native Hawaiians and others, these animals, we've lived with these animals for eons, basically. Hundreds of, if not thousands of years, and they were here when everybody got on the boat and the airplane came here. So isn't it funny? You find the native people already here and you find the native animals already here, but then when you get the newcomers come along, they got to tell you with ropes and strings and signs and everything else and threatening you that you're going to get arrested. Gee, that's funny. What happened to the native care for this? They apparently, if both are here, they obviously have gotten along together. And in fact, the real threat came from the newcomers coming and killing them, the monk seal, for pelts. At least some 1,500 on one occasion was authorized to be killed now in these islands. So imagine that kind of behavior. So I've probably made a grave mistake in that, telling you, the listener out there, that if you saw a monk seal, and if you approach it less than 150 feet, that's not illegal. Because, you see, some people go and fish, and they've been fishing for years in the same spot, because they go there and they catch the moi, and they know when they run, and then they nui, and what have you, and they may dive, and they'll never harass the monk seal. Never. They'll go out of their way to avoid it. In fact, they feel like it's a lucky day to be part of that and having that presence. But here comes some person with nice French perfume on and beautiful hairdo and a nice sun sweater and a sun shirt and short pants with Birkenstock shoes and saying, oh, go back, go back. you know, all of a sudden this newfound understanding of they got it and we don't. And so what's going to happen is that it makes people angry to be assaulted and accosted and being threatened with being arrested for just being out on the beach and seeing a monk seal. There's a great danger in that, so you drive this great divide and this disrespect that you have when you, in a calm voice, if you feel that the native people are so ignorant that you got to yell at them and teach them, then maybe you should teach them with respect. And I notice some of you say, well, we only see the part where she filmed the lady. Doesn't matter. No one has the right to knock a phone out of your hand and assault you. Not even the police. No one. There are measures to be taken that you, if you're violating the law or violating the privacy or what have you, then there are civil means and then what have you. But to be operating under a NOAA permit, and by the way, if you look at the makeup of these teams and see who's out there, so they tell you you can't go 150 feet or it's illegal to get any closer. But look at them and they'll have cameras. And go to their website and you can buy a t-shirt, you can buy photographs, you can buy all of that. So isn't it funny? Their signs say even taking pictures can disturb the monk seal. And don't look them in the eye. Now, I don't know if you know this, but you know you're not supposed to look a monk seal in the eye? Wow, that sounds like Mississippi. But their signs have that. But you look around and you think, well, gee, they got a blog site and they have a website and they have they do emails and Facebook, and you see all of these pictures and you can see the whiskers and you can see the pores in the whiskers and you can see the skin. How the hell did you get so close? You must have a camera that NASA has. No, you are actually using your permit and your authority and this little stupid relationship that you have woven in with Noah to allow you to violate the law, to violate that animal, and to violate the common decency and the common sense of the people here. Caller, good morning. Go ahead with your comments or question.
Yo, what's up, Carol Cox?
Yes, sir. What do you got for me?
Are you talking about, like, the...
No, I don't know what I'm... If you don't know, I don't know what I'm talking about.
No, I mean, like, are you talking about, like, the rail or something?
Okay, well, when you figure out what we're talking about,
well,
no, I'll then...
No, no, remember that one time you came out here, like...
Pardon me? Anyway, I don't know the pranksters. We get these calls every Sunday at the same time. And, you know, it's anybody can call up and talk, but, you know, just be reminded. I spend my life trying to do some good things, and I don't like to get jerked around when I'm... I don't really have much to say, but when I'm trying to say what little I have to say, you know, join in with me, but don't minimize it. Anyway, this is this thing about environmentalism, politics, and you see the across the nation. I talked to you last week, and I'm writing an article in Hawaii Fishing News this week for this month, coming month, and I hope you all go out. If nothing else, stand there, and I encourage you to just stand at the book stand and read it, if nothing else, because it will give you some greater depth of, and I've talked about these things, and there's a something brewing right now that, you know, someone say, well, Laura Thielen is a, let me tell you folks that Laura Thielen, this business down there at Bumblebee, at the harbor, and all of this stuff, she's part of that. She brought this stuff in. Remember that story I told you where Laura Thielen held open the position of DLNR, chief law enforcement chief? She held it open for months, F-4, a Coast Guard captain. And then he came on and did nothing but a little travel here and there, then abandoned ship. So, you know, we all put our trust, but I appreciate Ms. Thielen for what she do for the environment. But I also must be reminded that, you know, we can't just invest every thought and trust that we have into what she say, because I think there's a game going on here. And this article that I'm writing will speak to all of that. And I'll speak to the bit about Isla. Now, some of you think that it's a dislike for him. Well, when we talk about, someone said he was a harbor master. Great job. But go out there and look at the conditions of the harbor. Okay? Go to Waianae if you want to see. There's one man was practically beaten to death just in the last couple of weeks. I have an email here where initially there was some theft going on, and they reported it to the Dobar, and Dobar apparently leaked the name out, and the concerns is that as a result of disclosing the name to Dobar, the person was assaulted and was almost killed. I don't know what his status is right now. But the situation, remember the one I told you about recently about Maui? You saw it on TV, and I told you about it here on this show, where we were paying $1,000 a day to rent land that we really weren't using. We were storing an old buoy and a small boat there on it. $1,000 a day. And this goes into it was a 20 or 30 year lease that we were obligated to pay $1,000 a day for that time. Laura Thielen was in. What did she do to cancel that contract? So Ed Underwood was brought in. And there's, as I said to you, there's many things are brewing right now that presents itself as a problem. And one of them, there's a great debate right now if Ed Underwood should be, the governor should remove him and replace him with someone else. I tend to concur with the community, the boaters, and the other users that Ed Underwood has overstayed his welcome. Everything is in Dobar drips with sleaze. Everything. I made a request for the information. They gave me some, but, well, we can't talk about it. It's still being investigated. What do you mean you can't talk about it? You're spending the taxpayers' dollars at $1,000 a day to give to a private citizen, and you can't tell me where my money is going? You can't talk about it? Well, we're investigating it. Well, how long does it take you to investigate? You've had some 10 years or so. So this, when he was brought in, there's a lot of things now, and I will try and post some of these and look to the Hawaii Fishing News this coming month, this new print that's coming out for you fishermen out there. And if you're not concerned, I think it's now $200 a month for boaters. They raise a fee up, didn't allow the public to participate. Now, what does that have to do with Isla? Well, he was the chairman of Land and Natural Resources, and these things occurred under his watch. Now, I know what you're going to say. Well, it can't be everywhere, all the places, all the time. Yeah, you're right, and that's true. We don't look for Superman. But this is about when we're going to judge and when we're looking at the totality of resource management and the impacts, then I guess we have to hold people's feet to the fire. So again, I told you about the situation where there's a gentleman, Wilson Keahi, who allegedly was renting state land to other people or allowing them to store their boats on state land that he did not have within his purview, according to Ed Underwood, and was leasing it some $400 to $500, $600 per boat per month. And this was occurring, and they did an investigation. I spoke to some of the boaters, and they said, well, I was interviewed in September and August of last 2013, and they told me they were going to do something. Well, they didn't do anything. And since I've been asking questions, so here's what they decide to do. instead of taking issue with Keahi to represent and fix that, what they did was they went back and threatened the boaters and put a notice that you have 72 hours to remove your boat. They didn't bother to say, well, you know, we want to meet with you and get more statements or more information so that we can prosecute this guy, because if he was using state land and charging you, we believe that is not legal. But instead, run ahead, and I had asked her for a document, to request a document from DLNR, which was their investigation. And the investigation is complete. Occurred in 2013. But as soon as I asked for it, Jason Redullo says, well, no, we can't do that, can't give you that, because it's a cover-up, you see. They don't want to show how lazy they are. But this occurred on the William Isles watch now. It's not about do I like him or not. This is about if it was anybody, if Carlton Ching, if Thielen, Bill Patey, or whoever, Tim Johns, any of them. It's about being fair and making sure that people do the right thing in all capacity. So, what do we get? Absolutely nothing. We get the taxpayers being ripped off, and we still find ourselves with, it's about who you like, I guess. It's all about who you like. Who's a good guy? He's a good guy. And we will defraud ourselves because we place value in who's a good guy, when we should just say, well, it's okay. We're not worried about the good guys or the bad guys. We're worried about good government and the right thing to do, right? And so that's what is really, really bad. We are not focusing. And the documents that I sought from the DLNR DoCare, I also told you about recently, the two managers, the director and the director of Sodexo, or the director or chief of security, Keith Smythe and Redullo. Redullo is the acting director of acting chief, I should say, of law enforcement, and his assistant deputy is Smythe. And so, and come 5 o'clock, they reverse roles, where Smythe is the chief. And now the ethics commission says, well, we can't investigate that because, you see, I'm not going to go out there and do your work for you, basically paraphrasing, your dirty work for you. I don't know what your agenda is. You see, this is why you wake up in the morning and you can open your windows, you pull your curtains back, and there's Larry Ellison's yacht sitting there. This is why you pick up the paper and says he's just bought another island or so, or something. Because everything, the checks and balances that should be in place are not in place. And if they are in place, they don't work. They don't function. We have audits, and when you look at audits, they say they come out, but they missed the point. If it's city work, you take Chuck Tato, dripping with conflict. Ethics commission, lack of. No ethics. They select who they want to prosecute, and they select who they will investigate, and they serve, the ethics commissions serve as a tool, as a whipping stick for people that are in power and against people that they do not like. So that vote, this isn't about Isla. This isn't about, and for God's sake, when we say, well, he should go back and reappoint him. Well, I have news for you. You can appoint anybody. It's the whole political climate that these positions, they all complement one another. Now, I may be told, well, you better be careful, because the next time you go down and buy donuts, at that shop, his friend works there, his brother works there, in other words, be a good soldier, be quiet, keep your earmuffs on, don't get involved, and when things don't go right, start complaining about something to someone. But the people that you complain about, we welcome them every day and we invite them in the government. And we don't do anything. So we'll be back in the next hour, hopefully, and see what else we can come up with. And we'll talk to you later. This is the Carol Cox Show. And by the way, you can pick it up on the Internet. And 524-1080 is the number if you want to call in.
Second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
Chain gang, all day long they're saying, men working on the chain. Gang, that's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang.
All day long they work so hard till the sun is going down. Working on the highways and byways and wearing a frown. You hear them moaning their lives away. Then you hear somebody say,
that's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang, that's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang,
can't you hear them saying, I'm going home one of these days. I'm going home, see my woman whom I love so dear. But meanwhile, I've got to work right here.
That's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang, that's the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang,
all day long they're saying, my work is so hard, give me water, I'm thirsty, my work is so hard.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, good morning, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. A lovely day here. And I'd like to share with you, someone just sent me an email, and it's from Makai Ee. Let me read it to you. No subject it was. Aloha, Carol. I found myself in disagreement with the information you share on your show. However, I respect your views and our opinions. In the case of Carlton Ching, you are way out of bounds. The environmentalists are currently running DLNR. They put their people in the administrative position. Randy Awo testified against Ching. He is on their payroll. McGilvery was put in that position with endorsements from Continental International. Isla wasn't running DLNR. He was a Hawaiian being used to cover up what's really going on. Now, these are not my words. This is someone writing me an email, and I'll post this email so all of you can see it. Carlton Ching would be the transparency that DLNR needs. Leadership for the people. Leadership for the employees that have dedicated their lives to protect the natural resources. And that's that. Well, I'm really moved and always to know that if I can piss one person off with what I say and do, then I've had a good day. Because with my intentions and my purpose that I believe, and though self-imposed, I try to bring the truth to you. I try to see that justice is provided and prevail, because I've had so many unjust treatments that I think it's normal now. So thank you, writer. And if you listen to what I've said just last week, and if you pay attention to what absent of emotions, you would understand that you and I probably could be considered twins in our thinking. Because I, too, have stated that the environmental groups have infiltrated and saturated the agency and is making decisions that should be left to the biologists, to the managers, and all of that. So this is, again, where we can hear half of the conversation because we have a mission. We're on a mission. We're going to tell you what the hell we want to tell you anyway. We don't care if you're saying the same thing we're saying. We're just going to tell you. And I understand that. And in these times, it's many of you are frustrated. But go back to the basics. William Isler is a good person, pleasant person. He'll give you the shirt off of his back. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about something greater at stake. We're talking about a machine. A machine that is well oiled. It's oiled so perfectly, it has the finest oil that is used because they know the system. Now, I must remind you, pull your coattail, that I did, in fact, invite Carlton Ching to come on the show where we could sit and talk and he could share without me forming opinions from a distance. And he was too busy preparing for his testimony, according to Dan Dennison of the senior communication specialist, or whatever you call him. Probably what it should be described as, a senior way of screwing the people out of another salary and taking money that we don't need a senior communications person, then a junior communications person, and a junior to that junior, and what have you. And then, you know, and, well, who's taking care of the fish? Who speaks for the fish? Who speaks for the turtles? Is he that bilingual? I don't think so. He's speaking for the politician, the ones who want to come to rip and steal and take away and give away for their sake. How many politicians in this town have houses up in Tahoe, Reno, Vegas, that they don't declare that they may have gotten donated through, or some cheap price? How many? How many have cheap deals or good favor deals at Ko'olina? We'd never know, really, because if they don't report it, and if we have an ethics commission that go light on them and screw the whistleblower, you can understand where this game is going. But Randy R. Woe, the author of this email, so that maybe you don't listen to all the shows, and I would encourage you to go to carolcox.com. You can hear every one of them. They're still posted up. And they'll be posted up until the great asteroid collide with Earth, because the truth is the truth. And if you understand Randy R. Woe, I have reported that there were allegations, and they refused to respond and answer, and Ilo refused to answer, was that he used a helicopter, that a contract helicopter that is used normally for drug raids and drug pulling drugs and what have you, used that helicopter to go up in the K&I areas and those areas and on Maui and collect hevi and other species for a wedding. Also, being able to live here temporarily and travel back to Maui while we're spending per diem and what have you. So many of these issues, many, I have brought out. But I guess we get emotional and we're careful not to say anything about our friends. But my friends, when they cross that threshold and working for everybody, then I hope that they will adhere to the rules that I'm their friend. I don't get any special favors, no more than the next citizen, and that we carry ourselves in a way that we don't steal from the public, we don't lie from the public to the public, and those kinds of things. And so this guy McGilvery, you heard her, or he or she or it, whatever, I don't know if it's the computer printed this out, decided to send me an email, or a human being, but McGilvery was put in that position with endorsements from Continental International. I think they're saying Conservation International. And that is the problem. I've said this all along. The nonprofits get in. They don't have the ability, and even though I have a background and an expertise and lived my life in wildlife and photographs and reading and learning and going to college and as a special agent in the interior for endangered species and wildlife and a game warden, I don't believe that I know everything. I don't know any of that, but I can only tell you very few of these nonprofits will come to me, and I've gone and worked with them, and you find that they are either several things. They're either out for themselves, you work with them, and the shark finning. Let me tell you a little story so you will be brought up to snuff, up to par as to how things transpire in this world called environmentalism. First of all, if you look at all the major organizations and you look to see what is their composition of the people, primarily Anglo-Saxon. Many of them are male, many are female, but the makeup. Now, is that to say that people of color and other ethnic groups don't participate or care for the environment? I think you'd be half-cocked if you drew that conclusion. But that's one start. Another is a lot of these agencies, organizations, will lend themselves to being operatives of the CIA. So maybe that would be why some don't participate. An organization I went and worked for was Friends of Animals. They have direct relationship. They could walk in and go into Mali and walk into the USAID office and get what they want and go and get military equipment. Same organization that members of their organization earlier had was charged as terrorists and blew up a car, what have you. So when we see these things happen, they wiggle their way in. Now, some of you know about the Port Royal that went aground out there off of the Honolulu runway. Now, there was a settlement, and that's supposed to have gone back into the management of the coral and what have you, and there's a trust. But I'm informed, and I will be asking questions here shortly, that money is being used to pay the salary and the expenses of one of their interns there in the office of DLNR. Now, why would a state agency that is set up through the legislative process by mandate, by the constitution of the state, why would we now defer most of our activities and our actions to nonprofit organizations? Why would they be involved? So these things, and I agree, many occasions they have these situations where they will want a native person to be amongst them, but has no voice. That's just show and tell. So when they go before Congress, they can sit he or she at the end of the table and say, cry for us and tell us how you love the land and how you're being impacted, and we'll get the billion or the millions in grants, and then we'll feed you and fly you here and there and give you a gratuitous something. But the reality is, if there's a game that is being played in the environmental community, that many of you, when you stand back and look at the environmental injustice or the racism that is in place in these organizations, you'd scratch your head and say, why the hell would you give any of them a dime? That's the reality. Now, if you don't like that, then I could only say there's a shame on them for inventing a radio, because I discovered radio, and then I'm going to tell my story or tell my view and vision and my experience. So have at it. But those are the facts, and these are the things that I've walked the halls of these organizations. I've seen the organizations. I know how they can intervene. I know how they can work, and I know how they can commandeer a position or an office that is government and have a voice, because most of the people in there, they either support them through promotions and what have you, and then when they get promoted, they then carry their flag. So is it, they talk about Ellison and the developers. If you want to talk a long story about this, we will. And if you want to hear more about it, we'll set up an hour or two on radio, and it wouldn't still be enough time. So there's a great danger, but I was going to tell you a story about the shark fin industry. In 1992, I discovered that there are shark fins in the hull of these vessels, and I thought, well, this is funny. No one regulates this, and the sharks coming in, they're not a regulated species. But what I'll do is start documenting the volumes. And then there's a two-star that came in, and the Coast Guard and Customs had it under surveillance, and the side of the boat was sitting lower than it should be, so they knew it was carrying something heavy, and they had it under surveillance, and it's called the two-star, and a little black and white vessel. And they boarded, and then voila, almost got knocked out from the fumes, overwhelmed from the ammonia that, or the urethric urine from the shark fin, the smell of shark fin. And what it was shark fins, and the shark fin, there was about 11 ton of shark fin. So you imagine how many sharks that represents, 11 ton. If you're only getting maybe 5, 6, 8 pounds per shark, and you got 11 ton, how many sharks did that kill? So they bring it in, and they discover that it's not cocaine or drugs or illegal aliens or whatever, bombs. I don't know what they were looking for. But so they landed it there over there by Pier 38 before it was reconfigured. And I got wind of it, and I went down and photographed it. And you can go to EnviroWatch.org, and you can see that those pictures and everything, the history. But and I would go down and photograph that, and go into Chinatown and photograph, and then go to the vessels and photograph and document, and all the processing plants. I had that, and most of the environmental groups said, "Well, you know, we could use some of those pictures and use that, but we can't go down there because, you know, we being Howley, there's a Chinese mafia, and the Chinese mafia could, you know, see one of us down there at nighttime, you know." And see, this is the kind of fallacy, the big lie that is told. The Chinese mafia, first of all, had nothing to do with people from China. It had to do with every human being that loved to make money. So we get all of that, and things, you see it on TV and what have you, and there's a group got together, stood right there at POP near Pier 38 on a Saturday morning, and I just so happened I'd show up, and there's a group, and there's a TV camera, and I'm standing there, and I hear these words: "Why don't you come over here, William, and we need somebody, a brown-skinned person, to stand here and tell the story, because it's going to not look good for all those hollies. This holly standing here talking about." These are not my words. These are the words of the conservation groups, the environmentalists that were going to strike up this band and start singing the blues about the shark finning. So that's just one instance. When you lend yourself to that kind of behavior, the environmental community as we know it is ripe with bigotry and racism. The environmental community, you go out there right now and you see, do they have anything set up where the average citizen can go to the monuments that are out in the Northwest Hawaiian Islands? No. The biologists and their relatives, and if you're in conservation groups, that you get in there and you can wear a fleece jacket that says Colombian or whatever, looking fancy, you're likely to get on one of these boats and go out there. You see. The environmental arena, from a private firm, a private stance, is about as convoluted and corrupt as anything you've ever seen. We whine, when I use the term we whine, about others, but we don't look inward as to, in the environmental community, to see just how ailing and sick we are with our practices. And this is not, I don't want to get another email saying, well, gee, then that means you support Carlton Ching. No, if you know that, if you speak Ubonics, then you'll understand what I said. I do not support Carlton Ching's nomination. So, unless there's a problem, then. But this whole process of environmentalism, it has no regulatory body that governs it other than the tax office. everything else is fair game. They can assault, attack anybody they want to. They can initiate any campaign they want to. There's no regulatory. Nothing. And not that you would want to, because it's free speech, and you want people, free people, to be able to operate in a fashion. But don't you be fooled in thinking that they are altruistic and they are genuinely humanistic in their values. Many of them as bigoted as you could sit down and try to scratch out and scribble out in a description. That's just what is permitted. So, in this whole process, I have gone over the years. I've gone to Maryland, to the National Marine Fisheries Service office, and have gone through their records, because let me just give you something insight about environmentalism. You see, there was one organization that was going out selling whale trips, whale watching trips, up close and friendly, but they were doing it under a permit that they was, quote, was studying how the whale would be impacted from a boat approaching it. We even had famous artists out there in Avons or rubber rafts taking people out to go out and to study the whales. But it just so happened these scenes that they were studying would end up on canvas and sold for hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars. But Chemo goes out and get too close, he goes to jail. Because, you see, just like these Monk Seal people who have zealots, and that's what they are, and no science behind nothing they're doing, nothing. Because, and then why would the state and the federal agencies not be out there? If it was so critical, and I know some are going to say, well, we don't have the money. We don't have the money to do anything when you call government. Everything you call them about is, well, you know, we're short. That's why you need to call your legislator and ask them for more money. More money so that we can blow it off, you see. So this thing with environmentalism, and I'm fond of many of them, but I got to tell you, there is something about their ethics, their values. They'll lend themselves to politics. Many of them will, not all. And there are some that are just true in the spirit. They place the environment first. They don't allow environmentalism to be overwhelmed with politics or anything. They pick and choose. But in this town, there are not many causes that do not cross that line. And some live under the theory of the belief that if we leave it up to just the natural process, then others will get in and contaminate it and manipulate it and screw it and foul up the environment. So we'll get in and we'll put in our implements and we'll control it. The only problem is their control is silent because have a luxury to stand up. There's nothing more beautiful to an environmentalist or a foundation or whatever, nothing more soothing than to have a state or federal agency standing abreast of you saying that we really thank the Carol Cox Foundation for the money that he's giving and what he has promised and given us. We can do many of things with that. And then Carol Cox goes off and takes that same video and those pictures, and Carol Cox has been able to go to Ko'olawe and dive and get shots of bombs and go and see the monk seal and record the monk seal, see what it's eating and do all of those things, all under the pretense of science. And Carol Cox Foundation goes back and take all of these things that he's had access to that whereas the normal public wouldn't have access to. And in fact, many of the state agencies or regulatory bodies wouldn't have access because they don't have the money. So they then take that material, pictures, photographs, skeletons, whatever it is, and then they initiate a campaign, send money. Or they want to develop something. The Carol Cox wants to develop some cove or somewhere or get involved with something, and voila. And the trade-off is, so when the state agency or the federal agency needs or seeking a grant that they're going to probably participate in, they will be there on a campaign to go and work for you so that you, the state agency, can get that grant, and then we'll help you administer it. So it's a loser's paradise in this town. And it repeats itself throughout the nation. Just calling a person an environmentalist and suggesting that there's some negative connotation or their actions are negative, I'll tell you the whole story. I'll tell you what's going on. And whether you like it or not, it's there. It's the facts. And this party that wrote said, all of the things. I have found myself in disagreement with the information you share on your show. I mean, you know, not some, not a qualifier, but some, you know, and thank you. I mean, if I can get 1,000 of these, then it has a reverse of on me, and that is I go look for more, because that tells me that here's a person that means well, but is not accepting all those facts and not incorporating everything when you draw a conclusion. So, again, you can put whoever you want to in there. I'm asking the question still, why would, in the Ching matter, why would the governor be so hell-bent on being there? And I don't know the politics in this, not just this town, but I understand the basics of the legislative process. But why do we need a committee to interview Ching and a hearing and then vote him down, and then he still gets to go before the full Senate? Now, it may be constitutionally sound, but does it make sense? I mean, if a committee have been challenged with looking at more details and more specifics, don't you think less will be shared with the full body of the Senate? So what is the full Senate going to, if the committee has had access to many of things and many of testimonies, and I think it's going to the vote's going to come up this coming Tuesday, I think. I encourage you to, whether you support him or not support him, to call in and get involved. Because at the end of the day, whatever the developers, if Carlton Ching is inclined to do what's good for the developers while trying to find the sweet spot, it's okay. It is the politician who put him in. Is that you should remember this, and remember this when it comes to the election. See, David Ige probably said, what's there left? I know no one would ever vote for me as a senator or as a congressperson. That's all sewn up with the people that are in there. So, but I can build myself an empire right here. And so what if it only lasts 4 years? It bolsters me and it pushes me into a different strata of influence. And who are the people that are encouraging him? Is it Mr. Ariyoshi? Is it anybody? Is it Kaitan? Who is telling him, hold your ground, stand your grounds, man? Who? Or is it just he? But I think it's ill-advised, and I think that in this whole process, there are so many things that is important. Not just one about the development. We have water issues. Drinking water. Wastewater. There's a gentleman that sent me a letter the other day, and I'm going to sort through many of the things from the wastewater. He has filed a complaint with the Ethics Commission exposing contracts and what have you, and we'll try to get around to those after I do some more research on it. But again, this thing, and I'm jumping around, this thing with environmentalism is something you should understand. And I would say, when you hear them say we support this guy or vote for this guy, for me personally, I think that crosses the line, because I should be able to give you information and then you process it and do what the heck you want to do with it. And because to come back and say, well, you know, EnviroWatch, and a nonprofit organization whose purpose it is for injustice, ferreting out injustice and exposing government waste, fraud, and abuse, and politics and government and animal welfare and all, and then says, well, but come over here to my chicken farm. I have a chicken farm, an organic chicken farm. Well, that to me would be just completely the extreme opposite of what my organization stands for. So we investigate, we try to present the facts. When I say try to, we present the facts, but trying is whatever means we can, whether it's going and begging a TV station to do a story, and you know, and when the story is done, you don't get to tell them how the story is done or what is said. You just don't get that. But you try every resource, and respecting that, and that you give them the information and you step back. And it's a roll of dice. You might get a story that is simply passive aggressive. You take, for example, the story with the lady in the cell phone. I took her to the station. The story came out, and it's part of that is projecting that she was the victim. Sells pictures and what have you, and so that became, and they are having a disagreement. So in other words, if you didn't look carefully or listen carefully, and you're predisposed of, and this is just was just nothing more than a cat fight. So again, for me, that's where that trying come in. You submit the information, you present the people who's involved, and you step back. I don't have any say over these stories, but I'm willing to lend myself to bringing the facts, giving the facts, and then hoping that if nothing else, the subject reaches the air, and then you, the voter, you, the citizen, could be informed, and you draw your own conclusion. So that's my role in environmentalism, and as you've heard me say, I'm very reluctant to call myself an environmentalist, because of there's a lot of baggage that goes with that. You see, lots, and some of these people that have, you know, I could never find myself driving through a village of snotty-nosed kids and hungry and nothing to eat, and going up to see a monkey swing from a tree so I can get some pictures, you know, and because I have the Monkey Foundation. I couldn't do that. I probably would never make it to the mountain, because I would have to stop there, because my thinking is, if you stop and nurture the people that are having an impact and you educate them, then you're likely to be successful in protecting the monkeys. That's the way I think. But then there are communities that will say, well, that pretty picture there is worth $1 million if you get it in the right hands, the right media. That's the way the game's played. It's all about money, folks, in the environment. And as I say, green is white. Earlier I said that, and I know that's such a horrible thing to some of you. Horrible. But it is, that's the way it reflects the truth. And there is many of things. We cite how the native people, and we incorporate the native way and we compliment them, but then we don't trust the native people to do things. We want a politician. If he's in politics, then fine. But there are some people out here in the community that could turn this thing around and never sat in college, never sat in a college class in environmentalism. Some of the native Hawaiians, they would start off from who they are, bringing that to the table, and their values and their culture wouldn't allow for nonsense. Just wouldn't. And that's what's missing. They talk a big story out there about the environmentalists and the politicians, and they bring someone in. But that someone is not the right person. You see? So there is so much. I remember sitting down at Pier 17 and watching some men do a net. They're Hawaiian. And I was in awe of, within the 6 hours that I sat there watching them mend nets and build nets and fix nets and telling the stories. And my question to them was, has any government entity ever approached you to be serve as a consultant or anything? Never. Nothing. We've gone to OHA and thought maybe we could get grants to teach kids how to fish in Malama, the Aina, and protect the fisheries and when and where to fish and what not to, and they wouldn't fund us. So it's about a process that everything is in place. Everything is here, and we just are not using it. So I've talked to you to death. 524-1080 if you want to call in and have a comment. But that is, let me see, I think we got another email here. But no, it didn't. It just beeped and down. So I'm going to be looking at the landfill in the coming weeks, the Waimanalo Gulch landfill, and so to change the subject for a bit, I've already UIPA'd or FOIA'd some of the documents, and in those documents, just a few that I have received, shows that they've had a number of fires in the landfill. Now, this is a landfill that has been problematic already. And so, show you something cute of how people do things. So you read the paper and the report that they're required to file with the state, the operators of the landfill. And in the language it says, to reduce or eliminate the oxidation in this cell, we pump water on it. So, oxidation. Okay, well, we know what that means, but does that mean a fire or something, somebody that somebody buried and put in the landfill is breathing heavy? What is the oxidation? Why not just call it a fire? These, back to what earlier people were saying, the types, the words that are used, the names. Oxidation. So the liner, you know, there's a plastic liner in place. That is why they say, well, you know, this landfill can last 100 years because, and it won't impact the water table. But after 100 years, that geotextile liner is compromised and starts to decay possibly, and then it exceeds 100 years, and things that were delayed 100 years, all it is mean that they're going to now percolate through the liner. So, what does that say about us? We are talking about procrastination or putting things off. The liner does not impact the water table today. It prevents, supposedly in theory, contamination of the groundwater and preventing the fluids and contaminants from leaking from the trash into the ground. It'll do that for 100 years. Yeah. It'll do it for 100 years. But after 100 years, then you might as well take a can open and poke holes in it, and because eventually that's what's going to happen. It's going to deteriorate. What logic is that? This is an argument where we should stop burying trash. We should manage and recycle. And with an indictment that is there and have been publicly stated, how then can we allow the same two people now that were indicted are still working at the landfill? I know they're not guilty until proven guilty, but how is it that the state health department can allow them to continue to operate and have fires, which is means that they're not managing the landfill properly? Managed properly, you don't have fires. So managed properly means that you don't burn the liner, then you have a gaping hole, because to fix that hole, you got to remove all of that trash and daily cover and repair the liner. But until you do that, you create a problem. And you potentially, the leachate, the liquids and the contaminants that are mixed in the trash leaks through that hole. So that brings me to another point. They say that they were putting water on the landfill on top of the areas where the fire is occurring, and that in theory will suffocate and cause the dirt to harden and prevent the fire from burning any longer. But you and I know that oxygen, fuel, and the three components of fire. So unless you take away the oxygen from that, the hole could be somewhere else where the oxygen is coming in. So I have read and been told by experts that carbon dioxide, the same thing you drink in your Coca-Cola, will displace, pumped in there, will prevent the displace the oxygen and rob the fire, or as they say, the oxidation from burning. But why haven't we heard about that from the health department? Why didn't the environmentalist Gary Gill, under his watch, under his directorship as acting director and then environmental director, why didn't we hear this? Why didn't he take legal action against this landfill? See, so, you know, whether it's Carlton Ching or Kuching or Gary Gill or Carol Cox, unless the system is transparent and honest and standing tall, it doesn't matter who you put in. It's the system itself, the entire system is corrupt. And not in a negative sense, it's a system that has probably, nobody wants to touch or tweak or fix it, because that's when people will get exposed, or so leave it be. Like a family secret. Don't, we just won't even talk about it. Just let it be. And so everybody walk around numb. So, now, part of this thing was violations at the landfill. There's also leachate issues. You're only allowed to have a certain amount of leachate, and the leachate is just, could be rainwater or just fluids that when we throw our cans and they get punctured and there's soup or water or whatever by the million cans, that becomes a liquid, and it comes in contact, by definition, once it comes in contact with trash, it becomes defined as leachate. So you're supposed to manage that leachate, and you don't want the whole thing filled with water anyway, because then you're displacing and you're losing space for a landfill. So on many occasions, like they had when the medical waves that contributed there, their leachate sump pumps and sump areas were broken or exceeded the levels that are allowed. So if you're today you're exceeding the levels, and we have a rain, as Gary Gill says, a 100-year storm that came through, and then you're going to have another washout. But in this case, many instances, it was the ash from H-Power. And there's so many constituents of concern, lead, mercury, cadmium, and all. And what if that runs into the ocean constantly? So there's been violations, and they call them incidences, exceeding the levels. So this landfill, in my opinion, based on the documentation that I have so far, there's been a number of violations, but you haven't didn't hear one single word from Gary Gill to alert you or under his administration to alert you or alert the public that we have these problems. So what then happens is that in this landfill, why it's so critical that you manage your leachate, there is a requirement to have a storm management plan. So this suggests that the storm management plan to take on any rain, heavy rain, like a 100-year rain or 25-year rain, it's supposed to sustain itself and not be impacted, and you're able to manage that, divert that storm water away from the trash so it does not become leachate, and then that does what does hit the trash goes into the leachate sump, and then you are to suck it up and transport it to the treatment plant. But in these instances, they're exceeding. So we're on the cusp. We're always sitting on the teetering on failure up there, folks. And don't mention the methane, so you know that the amount. So are they managing? If they're having fires, in one instance, they indicated that fires were just the workers, the volunteer workers, temporary hires, I should say, spotted a fire just apparently right on the surface. So this landfill, I think what is happening is that because it's owned by the city, the state is showing a courtesy to the city because, as Steve Chang put it, well, why should we really be aggressive in prosecuting the city when, in fact, it's the city is still the taxpayers of the city? So if we fine the city, we're simply fining the taxpayer. So we're just taking money out of the city purse and putting it in the state purse. That's what environmental policies are here in the state. You see, this isn't about who likes who and who's good and who's bad and what have you. It's the practices. It's the philosophy that it runs rampant of about. And I hear this often. Why should we do anything to the city? They're just a taxpayer. We're just punishing the taxpayer. Well, let me get this right. Why should we punish the city in the lawsuit? Why, when Earth Justice and Surf Rider Foundation, Surf Rider, whatever it was, that filed the lawsuit and was awarded, one of them was awarded a couple million dollars in an agreement, consent, and whatever. If that's the case, why do we bother to go through that? And why is waste management in the city and county of Honolulu getting a courtesy? And you know that the logics or the illogical process here is that they touted the H-Power as being the answer to all of our waste and going to reduce everything. Let me just lay out in the next minute here. See, the contract with the landfill management is that they will receive a certain tonnage daily or annually. We guarantee them that or we pay them. Okay. The managers at the H-Power is guaranteed a certain amount of trash. So if we shut down H-Power to clean it on a material day or if it breaks down, then we shift that trash over to the landfill, we're never going to stay ahead of the game, and we're going to owe somebody. So this is the kind of management that we have in our city government, or as you guys like to say, the good people, the nice people. But they just can't rise to the occasion. They can't. They can't cut the mustard. The decisions are flawed left and right. And so there then invites the bigger trouble. Let's privatize. Not because we're not, the workers that we hire are not efficient. It's just that if this system isn't working and we don't know what the heck we're doing, let's privatize it, and that then it allows for us to funnel taxpayers' dollars to our friends. And our friends could be anyone in the form of big donors for tax, for elections, and big donors that hold fundraisers, and big donors that buy maybe 30 of your tickets for $5,000. You understand? So that's where we are, folks, and with the landfill. It does not matter if Carlton Ching, I oppose his nomination personally, and but in reality, I think unless we, the voters, demand more and act as if we care in how we handle our votes and where we invest our votes in and who we trust, then unless we address that, it doesn't matter who they appoint. It's a system. And the people with money, they have no power on election day. They have zero power. Zero power. You have all the power. It's a rare day in America, in these times, where you, the voter, have more power than you've ever had in your life. And they know it. And that's why they're so nice and courteous and put the best aloha shirt on and bring you the crispiest pig there is and serve you at their fundraisers and their dinners and their gatherings and their presentation. Because they know there's one day that they all fear. That's election day. But if they can pry your vote out of those hands of yours, as Charlton Heston says, if they can get that out of your hand, and steer it the way they want to, bingo. You lose, they win. So we'll see you next week, and take care.
Miami. South Beach, bringing the heat. Can y'all feel that? Can y'all feel that? Jig it out. Here I am in the place where I come let go. In Miami, the bass and the sunset low. Every day like a Mardi Gras. Everybody party all day. No work, all play, okay? So we sip a little something, lay the rest to spill. Me and Charlie at the bar running up a high bill. Nothing less than ill when we dress to kill. Every time the ladies pass, they be like, can y'all feel me? All ages and races, real sweet faces. Every different nation, Spanish, Haitian, Indian, Jamaican, black, white, Cuban, or Asian. I only came for 2 days of playing, but every time I come, I always wind up staying. This the type of town I can spend a few days in. Miami, the city that keeps the roof blazing.
Party in the city where the heat is on, all night on the beach till the break of dawn.
Welcome to Miami. Bienvenido a Miami.
Bouncing in the club where the heat is on, all night on the beach till the break of dawn.
I'm going to Miami.
Welcome to Miami.
Yo, I heard the rainstorms ain't nothing to mess with, but I can't feel a drip on the strip. It's a trip. Ladies half dressed, full of your quip, and they be screaming out. So I'm thinking I'ma scoop me something hot in this South Summer Meringue Mountain Pot. Hottest club in the city, and it's right on the beach. Temperature, get the it's about 500 degrees in the Caribbean seas with the hot mommies screaming. Every time I come to town, they be spotting me in the drop Bentley, ain't no stopping me. So cash in your dough and flow to this fashion show, pound for pound, anywhere you go. Yo, ain't no city in the world like this.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.